We're bringing the meeting to order at 7 o'clock. I will be doing the invocation, and the flag salute will be done by George Fuller. You rise. Dear Lord, we want to thank you for all you've done for the students in this district, and we ask that you keep them safe during the summer months and be with us as we make the decisions that affect their lives. In his name we pray. Amen.
Ready? Again.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call. Monica?
She went to go get water for everybody.
I'm here. Mr. Fuller?
Here.
Mr. Spence?
I'm here.
Mr. Cox?
Here.
Ms. Shoemaker?
Here.
Ms. Castillo?
Here.
I did your job very well. There is nothing to report out of closed session. Is there anything a board member would like to report out at this time? Seeing no one has anything to comment, this is a time for public input. I have no blue cards in front of me. Was there anything anyone would like to say? Seeing no one at this time, we're moving on to the organizational part of our meeting. Is there anything anyone would like to take off of consent?
Item 13.
Is there anything anyone would like to add to consent?
Number 11. Number 4.
Not on 11, no. Yeah. On 4, if we could add other names to that, it'd pay not to come. I think that'd be great.
You gotta have a quorum.
So we're not adding anything?
Well, 11. Can we add
4?
No, Mr. Spence didn't want to take off 11, and then there's agreement on 4?
Yep. Can we put 4 on consent?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
Mr. Cox, you allowed to vote on that?
Of course.
Who votes on his travel?
I vote on my travel.
You know, I wanted
I vote
to
on
say
my compensation.
I wanted to say something to that, not that I'm not going to vote for it.
Oh, yeah, fine. Sure. Expose my situation, sure, for your own.
Actually, I do have a question, because I thought we already had a policy on this. So since you took it off.
Is there a motion to move the consent calendar?
Just make sure the 11 is 11 is not on.
Right.
Okay.
Nothing's on, right?
The only thing how it's been amended is 13 has been taken off of consent, so there'll be discussion on number 16. Is there a motion for
16?
13.
13. Okay. And 16 is on consent. With that, I'll move it.
Is there a second?
Yeah.
It was the approval of the agenda and consent items as amended. It was moved by Mr. Fuller and seconded by Jessica Shoemaker. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? It passes unanimously. That brings us to item number 3, the information report for the SELPA update. Mrs. Castillo?
Thank you very much. Board members, as a follow-up to our presentation in the previous meeting, we have with us once again our SELPA director and our past director, Jack Lucas. Both may come forward, and they have a brief fiscal and program information report, and then any questions or comments that you'd like to make. So we have Sarah Jockham, and we have our past director, Mr. Lucas.
Good
that one.
This, let me understand. What we're getting in front of us now, before we even start, is brand new information in addition to what we already had in our packet.
Yes.
We haven't seen this before.
Well, you,
the last 30 seconds.
You've seen the text before. What I've added to this are the actual funding amounts. And the reason for that is when, in order to meet your deadline, we didn't have all of the P2 certification. We've just gone through a major certification.
Okay, but I'll be more direct. These three pages have not been submitted for our review up to about 45 seconds ago.
Not in this format. No, they've added some things. Okay.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And again, the reason for that is because of the fact we've just gone through a certification. It changes all of the numbers somewhat. We actually lost almost, I think, $400,000 between P1 and P2 because of rebenching the out-of-home bed allowance. Maybe the best way to start is if you look at the very last page. I should have put it up front and didn't. If you look at the very last page, the two figures there in the middle of the page, for 2008-09 now, with P2 certification, our total funding is $101,756,856. Of that amount, $98,728,631 is being transferred out directly to all of the local education agencies, which is all of the districts, the 11 districts in the Selva and the four LEA charter schools and the county office as a major service provider. So that's kind of the overall recap. I think what sets the Selva apart from a school district is most of the funding that's coming in is being transferred out rather than being expended by the Selva. And the reason for that is because all of the districts and the charter schools are operating the programs. And the money needs to go out on a monthly basis to them so that they can run those programs. There's a very small portion that's really being kept by the Selva in terms of actual expenditures. If you want to go back to the beginning, then, to the first page, what we had given you early was the text in these blocks, what I've added in bold there, which is different from what you had previously. Is the actual amounts now based on P2. So program funding, and in terms of program funding, we're talking about the non-severe programs that all of the districts and charter schools are operating, the LA charter schools. We've allocated $52,105,922 to that program, and everyone is getting a share of that. Provider program funding are programs where we have a district that's operating a program for multiple districts within the Selva. These are primarily low-incidence programs and programs for students with significant disabilities, and it's a situation where we have relatively small numbers. Of our 15,000 kids, there are like 1,900 kids in provider programs. And so these are relatively small programs but also our most costly programs. Again, of our total funding block of $101 million, we've allocated $34,904,067 to those programs. Regionalized Services Program Specialist, again, the text was there, but what you have now is the final allocation of $2,028,224, and of that $2 million, $1.3 million is being allocated out to the districts to provide program specialists at the district level. This SELPA, unlike many SELPAs, does not hire program specialists and have them go out to the districts. As long as I was here, which was 23 years, we've always done it in reverse. We allow the districts to hire program specialists, and so what we do is we pass the bulk of the regionalized services funding out to the districts in order to hire those people. Low-incidence funding. This is a specialized funding calculation. It is for low-incidence equipment. It has to be for equipment that's unique to the low-incidence disability. We had $214,393. It's going out to the six provider programs that are operating, providing services to our low-incidence students. Low-incidence is deaf and hard of hearing, visual impairments, orthopedic impairments, and deaf-blind. Those are the four categories that are considered low incidence. Obviously, our programs for children with significant disabilities, emotional disturbance, autism, are also low incidence programs. But in terms of the state's definition and in terms of the Ed Code definition, they're not. And so this block of funding for equipment is strictly for those four handicapping conditions. Then program funding for occupational therapy services. We've allocated $2.3 million, and this is basically what we've done here is contracted with one firm to do all of the occupational therapy services for all the children within the East San Gabriel SELPA. The reason for doing that was to be able to negotiate a cost-effective rate, and what that means then is that all of the billings are coming into the SELPA, and the SELPA is paying those on a monthly basis. Otherwise, that money would also be going out directly to the districts. Mental health prevention funding is a specialized allocation within the state budget. It's to be used to provide counseling for students who are in danger of possible or possibly in need of going to the LA County Department of Mental Health for mental health services. And it's the idea of the funding was to be able to provide services to perhaps keep students from having to become involved in the mental health system. Then the other federal grants. What we have here are several funding grant sources that come in from the federal government. They all have specific funding rules in which, in terms of how to spend them. We have two preschool grants. Preschool local entitlement, our funding amount was $1,088,70. We allocate this funding out to all of the districts who are operating preschool services based on account of children with disabilities who are fall in the 3 and 4 year old age category. Federal preschool is actually for the same thing. It's in this case, we're getting an additional $604,209. We're allocating it in the same way. The reason this is broken into two blocks is because of the IDEA. The first part comes out of local assistance. The second part comes out of what they call Section 619. If you look at the Act, you would find a Section 619 of the Act, and that's where that the federal preschool comes from. So it's the technicality of how the funding comes from the federal government as to why it's broken up. It's used for the same purpose, to provide preschool services. Preschool staff development is a very small grant that we get for staff development for preschool programs. We use the same methodology as the other preschool grants. Then we have a staff development grant, $48,244. This money is being allocated to each of the districts and the LEA charters based on their count, prior year count of children who are 5 through 21 years old. The final two, low incidence services. This is funding now for services to low incidence students. It's the same group that we talked about previously. It goes again to the 6 districts who operate those programs, and we allocate it to them based on the low incidence count. The final one, Part C infant funding. We have 3 districts in the SELPA that operate infant services for low-incidence students. Azusa does visually impaired, Covina Valley does deaf and hard of hearing, and Pomona does deaf and hard of hearing and also orthopedically impaired for infants. And we allocate that funding out to those 3 agencies based on account of infants, prior year count of infants. Questions on any of that. I think that's a quick overview of all the funding sources, and then we can go from there and see what you have.
Are there any questions?
Yes.
Mr. Fuller.
Yes. First, I'm almost afraid, I don't know quite how to ask it. You classified, there's 2 sections of low incidence. The first section was visually impaired, orthopedically handicapped.
Deaf and hard of hearing, and also deaf blind.
And then you had a second category?
Well, are you talking about in terms of the allocations or in terms of blocks of students?
Well, I'm just saying, as a professional, you said there was autism was low incidence and there were some others. Can you name those?
Autism and emotional disturbance would be the other two that would be prominent.
I thought you said 4. And you would classify those as low incidence.
Well, the state of California in the Ed Code does not classify them as low incidence. They're low incidence in terms of the fact that we have within the total population, you will find very small numbers of those students with that disability, as opposed to learning disabilities, which are almost half of our population.
Or 80%.
And so, you know, very often what we do is we use low incidence generically to mean populations where you have students where you have a relatively low incidence within the total population. In addition to that, and that includes then those that the state of California defines as low incidence, which is visually impaired, deaf and hard of hearing, orthopedically impaired, and deaf blind. To give you an idea, about 15,000 kids. You know, I think probably somewhere in between. It is a relatively low incidence disability, but not. It is. We have greater numbers of students with mental retardation and developmental delay than we do with the other populations.
Okay. Go ahead. I interrupted you. What were you going to conclude with? You were concluding. I guess I. Okay, we'll come back to that. 1,077 students you have with SRD. Is that correct?
We have about 1,900 students that fall into our provider programs. That includes the low incidence and developmental delay, mental retardation, emotional disturbance, and autism. Okay, so when you put all three of those together within our CELPA, we have about a little over 1,900 students.
Which SRD? 1,077 is where the figures I was provided, but that was the last time. Or SRD or autism. Is that correct?
I don't think I have the CELPA totals. I'm not sure that autism is quite that high within the CELPA.
I just figured it caught my eye, but anyway. But the state, fortunately, is saying it's not low incidence. They're within the general category.
No, you know, within that specialized equipment, no, they don't. We think it should be, to be honest with you. We think both emotional disturbance and autism ought to be in that group. And this, there were times in the past when we tried to get a change, and it's never happened. We've never been able to persuade the legislature that ought to be part of the low incidence group.
Let me ask you the next question. Right. Having serious disagreement with the state legislature, are you allocating like the state legislature wants you to in terms of allocation to what you consider not to be low incidence, but in the general population, even though you may disagree with that?
Well, we cannot allocate that block of $214,000 that's allocated to low incidence equipment. We cannot allocate to any but those four disabilities. In terms of our overall funding, yes, we're allocating $34.9 million to our provider programs, which includes all of the ones that we've been talking about, the four low incidents plus the other three. So, yes, the state of California doesn't tell you locally how to allocate your funds. Part of the AB 602 model is to allow each CELPA to look at the children that they have to serve and make a determination about how they're going to allocate their funds. In our case, we've made a significant contribution to, or we're contributing significantly to those low incidence programs. And the ED and autism and MR programs in terms of supporting those provider programs with funding rather than charging a full cost for those programs.
AB 3632 money does not come through you, or does it?
We get no AB 3632 money. The County Office of Education gets AB 3632 money that they then pass on to the Los Angeles County Department of Mental Health. AB 3632 money comes from another section of the budget, and so we don't see that locally, no. We refer kids, okay, and we don't have to pay for those services, but we do not get that funding directly.
Okay, in the CELPA, you were mentioning that you have something for students that may have these emotional disturbance. Are you using the money the CELPA has to keep them from applying for AB 3632 or a supplement?
No. What we're supposed to be doing is trying to provide services in front of referring, okay, is what we're doing. It's preventative. The feeling was, if we could provide some things locally, then there would be less referrals to LA County Department of Mental Health or to other departmental, to a county department of mental health agency across the state.
Well, tell me about this 80-20 split on attendance and pupil allocation and what it is and where it came from.
Okay. That's going back to the first page, the program funding, the $52,105,922 is what we're allocating out, what we've called 80-20. We've up through 2008-09, we've been using three-year average ADA, average daily attendance, and then 80% has gone out based on three-year average ADA, 20% has gone out based on three-year average pupil count.
So we've had an increase last year of 135 students with exceptional needs, because we've taken responsibility and perhaps they're finding a desirable place to bring their children, which I'm glad to hear. But in essence, we are receiving less monies than we would have because of this three-year allocation. That because of that, we take on 135 more students with exceptional needs, going up to 800, I believe is the figure. But we're only allocated a portion of that to cover their costs.
You're not receiving less funding. You're not receiving as much as you would have if we hadn't been doing the three-year averaging. Mm-hmm. In 2009-10, we're ending the three-year averaging, and we're going to do current year ADA, current year pupil count. And so obviously, you know, increases, single-year increases, will we'll see a greater amount of funding than you would have otherwise than using the three-year average. But in using the three-year average, if you've had an increase in average daily attendance, which West Covina has, you're seeing an increase, just not to the degree you would have had we not been doing the averages.
So we're delivering exceptional services with the burden of not being able to fund them in the manner that we should.
Well, I think just about every district would argue the same thing in terms of the fact that this is a heavily underfunded program, mm-hmm. Okay, mostly because of lack of federal funding.
How do we get to this 80-20 split in our allocation in the manner that we got there? Are other selfless following it, or how did we get to it?
No, it's something that we decided to do locally. What happened is when we got to 2005-06, we realized that the declining ADA was not a 1 or 2 year aberration, that in fact it was going to go on. We decided we had to do something because in our allocation, in our original allocation plan, we had no way to handle declining ADA. Okay, we did not account for it. The reason we did not account for it is because I think no one ever anticipated we would be in this kind of decline. It turned out for us in East San Gabriel, 2003-04 was the tipping year. We had increased our ADA in 2003-04 very slightly, and then we began to go into decline in 2004-05. So we went through decline in 2004-05. We were into decline in 2005-06. We started looking at it and saying, this funding model is not going to work completely. And so that's when we put together a very large group of both program directors and business staff and talked about what can we do. And I think we spent about 6 months going back and forth and finally landed on the three-year averaging and the 80-20 in terms of allocation of funds.
Which leads me into the next question. We continue to get reduced funding out of the state level. How are we going to fund all the required services with the provided amounts, with the reduced amounts?
Well, you're going to take more money out of the general fund. I mean, just pure, plain, and simple. That's what everybody is doing. It's not just East San Gabriel. What we're doing is, if we're not getting increases in state and federal funds, you're taking it out of the general fund. Special ed is set up in such a way that there are three sources of funding: local, state, and federal. The problem with the system is that both the Fed and the state can say, we're going to give you X number of dollars per year. And then what happens is you're left at the local level to make up the difference with the general fund.
Okay.
And that means, you know, it becomes kind of an open liability in the fact that you certainly are going to set up a new budget for what you think it's going to cost you for the year. But because of the fact that service delivery for special ed is open-ended, your budget may or may not work. And if it doesn't, then you're going to have to take more money out of the general fund. It is the way special ed is. It's not an East St. Gabriel thing. It is special education at the state and federal level. In terms of funding, I think that 2008-09 is the first year when we actually are getting less total funding than we did previously. Even though we are in decline, because there were cost of living adjustments in 6-7 and 7-8, we had more state funding than we did in the prior year. In 8-9 for the first year is the first time where we actually have less state funding coming into East San Gabriel because of our rate of declining ADA. Okay.
Which leads me into the next one, is how are you going to reduce this equitably, other than if you have an increase, we won't give you as much, but if you have a decrease, you'll get more, which is basically what's happening on your three-year average.
It's not that you're going to get more. It's that you're not going to experience. It's going to take longer for you to lose the money than you would otherwise. You're certainly not getting more. If your three-year average is going down, okay, if you're losing ADA every year, your three-year average is going down every year, it means it's going to take much longer. And we've already taken care of the problem. In 9-10, we're no longer going to be doing averaging.
Okay.
You know, we looked at it after running for 2 years and going into 8-9, looked at it and said, this is not going to work. Okay, I mean, it became obvious at that point that we needed to do something. And so we've gone back and Superintendent's Council approved changing the allocation plan. And so what will happen in 9-10 and in the information I'm putting together tomorrow for the business administrators, in 9-10 we'll be using current year ADA, current year pupil count. And so the averaging will come to a stop.
Which answers my next question. Since we've maintained increased attendance and gone that route, then we will begin receiving the funding that will allow us to continue with our program as it continues to move forward. Has the 80-20 split gone with the state allocation what they intended?
You know, there really is no specific intent by the state to tell us how to expend this money. Okay? It really is. The way this AB 602 funding plan was set up is it allows you, it brings a set amount of money, state and federal funds, down to the local level, where then we decide how we should allocate it based on our needs across, in our case, 11 districts and the charter schools, the LEA charter schools that are working with us. And so there's nothing in the Ed Code that says you ought to provide so much money for this, so much money for that. Yes, there's an allocation that we go. I mean, there's the calculation goes through, and if there's cost of living adjustment, we get that. If there's growth, otherwise, if you're a decline, you get a declining penalty. But in the end, what we end up with is $98 million. Okay, 98-point-something million, and we then make a determination: how are we going to spend that money? How are we going to allocate that money out to the people who are providing services?
Okay, we get $101 million.
We get $101 million.
The difference, what happens to
the difference between the 98 and 101 are the other federal grants. In terms of the 602 calculation itself, it's 98 million something.
Let me ask you, in terms of funding, you said there's no state direction. What about federal law and idea? If we have a child that needs physical therapy, that needs occupational therapy, that needs some form of communication aids, that we maybe needs an aid, mm-hmm. We can just say, well, there's no guidelines, and we don't need to do that?
All of the funding that we've – this $101 million are restricted special ed funds, okay? And obviously they have to be spent for special ed purposes. When I say the state has not given us direction, they've not told us exactly how we allocate those funds to member districts within the SALPA in order to provide those services. These are all obviously – I'm sorry, I should have clarified that. These are all obviously restricted special ed funds. They have to be spent on special ed programs.
Okay, and how much – how – if we change the AU – the administrative unit, how much is going to the county now, and how much are we going to save keeping it here in our own administrative unit?
Well, I'm looking for those sheets is why I'm not talking. Let me get a couple more things in front of me here. The county is performing two roles. The county is the administrative unit of the SALPA. Under that, what they're doing is they're receiving funds, they're dispersing funds based on our allocation plan. They're also then doing the reporting, the financial reporting back to the state for all of the funding. That's one job that the county has. The county office is also a large service provider within the SALPA. Okay, and they're operating a program for over 1,000 students with significant disabilities, emotional disturbance, autism, and developmental delay in MR. So the county is performing two roles. The AU role is the least expensive. Okay, in terms of what the county is in essence charging us within direct rates and everything, it's about in seven using the 7-8 figures, it was $973,364. That's what we were charged in indirects and support costs for the AU function. The county office actually is expending over $30 million for that other program. But there are two distinct things. The program that the county operates is over $30 million. But that has nothing to do with the administrative unit. These are two discrete functions, even though they're doing both of them.
The question is, let me be more direct. How much money do we pay the county for their AU costs?
Yeah, in 7-8 it was 973,364. We're just closing 8-9. I don't have all the final figures, but it will be something close to that.
And so it'll be close to a million. How mm-hmm. much will it be if we have an AU?
You mean if we move the AU somewhere else?
Right.
I think it will go down to somewhere around a half a million or less. Okay. Easy.
Can I ask very gingerly who recommended we stay with the county during the time that we were paying $1 million and not making the move?
Well, we haven't always been paying $1 million. All right.
I mean, with the time of the $1 million, who recommended we stay with the county? Let me be more direct.
Well, I don't think it was a case of recommending we stay. It was a case of the county has been the administrative unit since the SELPA was formed in 1981. It was during the 81-82 school year the SELPA was formed. The county became the administrative unit, and we've gone along with that.
Were you SELPA director then?
No, I didn't start until 84.
And you were until when?
Until last year, 7-8. I finished in 7-8.
Okay.
What's happened over time is this. When I first started, when the county first started doing this, what they were doing is they were keeping the interest and they were charging an indirect, and the indirect was somewhere around $20,000. Frankly, for a number of years, I thought the county was not getting reimbursed for what it cost them to do the job, to be honest with you. Over time, what has happened is two things have happened over time. They started taking a larger indirect out of our local assistance grant, which is $22.6 million, and that has grown kind of slowly over time. All right, at first they were something less than 1%, and then it began to grow from there until in 7-8 they were taking something, I think, a little over 2.2% or something of that nature, but it was $719,000. So it's not something that happened, you know, between one year and the next. It was a gradual thing over time. The other thing that happened is this. When we, and I think it was 2003-04, when we started working with a single vendor for occupational therapy services, what happened was that increased our indirect rate because they were charging us, I think it's 6% on that cost. We started out at $1.4 million. We've grown to over $2.6 million. Again, what happens is because of the increase in providing those services to children, that's also increased the indirect. And so it's kind of creeped up over time. Probably I should have said something sooner, to be
and
honest
now
with you.
You've retired from there, and now you're hired back as a consultant. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. One last question. Has COVA been paid its full amount of monies?
Not yet.
I'll reserve my comments till closing, but I may listen to others.
Any other questions? Ms. Shoemaker.
Why hasn't COVA been paid?
Well, COVA hasn't been paid because we're still trying to figure out when the state is going to be giving us money.
Why is the SELPA in a position that it does not have the money to pay COVA that is owed to them?
In terms of cash sitting today, no. We're waiting for more money to come in. Okay. We should have gotten money in July. We didn't get it. I think we're being told.
The question was, why isn't the money already there? It's money you owe them. It's not a special bill that came in.
The money isn't there because every month when money comes in, we allocate it out to everybody to fund programs. And at the point at which the decision was made to pay COVA, we hadn't been able yet to set aside money, to be honest with you. That's what it is. We did not have $1.4 million sitting somewhere waiting to do this. There was a decision made by the Superintendent's Council. We decided to change the three-year averaging, and in doing that, we felt that we should go back and make an adjustment to West Covina because of what the three-year averaging did in terms of not getting more funding for it. But we did not have any. There was not money sitting aside that we had not given to COVA. And so what we have to do is get the money together in order to pay them.
When did the Superintendent's Council decide to that CAVA was owed some adjustment money?
I think it was in March.
And so from March to the end of the year, there was not any attempt to set something aside, start making payments, something?
No, we were into a discussion about should we give you the ARRA money that's come in, or should we use state entitlement money? And we were trying to figure out which was easier for you to get in less work in terms of reporting. At first, we were going to just take the ARRA money when it came in and said we're going to use that. There is very significant reporting for the ARRA special ed money, the $20.6 million we're going to be getting. Not only do you have to report financially, but you have to report a narrative on what you're doing with it. We don't even have the reporting format yet from the Fed. And so we went back and forth trying to figure out which would be best. I think we've come to the conclusion it would be best to give you state entitlement money. You don't end up with that reporting requirement. And right when we finally came to that conclusion, we're now waiting for money to come in. And, you know, we've gone through deferrals, and we're just – in a normal year, I could say to you, we're going to have it done here, okay, or we might have had it done. Given the mess that we're in with the fact that the state, every time we turn around, is deferring something – And in fact, not knowing yet what the final deferrals will be. That's why you haven't gotten it yet.
Okay. You mentioned that you believe the cost of the AU moving it from LACO will be $500,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
How do you know this?
Well, because we're not going to pay an indirect rate to the AU to do that. We're going to ask them to. We're going to give them a set amount of money in order to perform that function. We're going to look at the people that they need. We're going to look at what the cost would be associated with that and then come up with an amount of money. When you do it on the indirect, and you know, it just – you have no control over it. It doesn't make any sense. We ought to be able to say they need two or three people in order to perform this function within the – it's primarily in the business office. All right, and look at what it is, and therefore have a set amount.
When will we know if it's two people, three people, four people, five people?
When we go through the process, go through an RFP process and have them look at it and make the determination on what they think it will take.
Okay. At the last board meeting, it was brought up that, you know, the timeline is such that the local area plan will not be approved by the districts until after the deadline to rescind or withdraw from LACO. Should a district not be content with who is determined to be the administrative unit? Has any steps been made to adjust the RFP process so that districts will have the plans before the deadline? That way we don't end up in a situation where, say, West Covina says, no, we don't want this administrative unit. We're not going forward with this. What steps have been taken to ensure? And quite frankly, I was surprised in talking to board members from districts that are part of our SELPA that they are not aware that we are facing a timeline where if they don't like the administrative unit, what do we do?
Well, you know, our drop-back position is if we can't come to an agreement on who should become the AU, we will stay with the county. I mean, that's...
But the determination on who the AU will not be approved until after the deadline to withdraw our rescission from LACO, is what we were told at the last meeting.
We talked about the county said they needed to know, like, by December in order for them to do, RIF notices,
And we wouldn't see the plans till January.
Okay.
Well, what...
Yes, go ahead.
We discussed that timeline concern at the last superintendent's council meeting, and we kind of came up with a timeline to be able to address that concern, and that is that the RFP will go out by July 31st, and it's going to go out to all of the districts and LEAs within the SELPA. They're due back September 11th.
Okay.
September 15th, we have a finance committee will meet and go through them, and then they will be taken to superintendent's council September 18th. If for any reason there is not a decision made on September 18th, Superintendent's Council, and they want more information, we have another meeting in October to make that final decision. If the superintendents say we need to go back and bring this to our board with the, you know, and then come back to the board in October and be able to come back with any final decisions at the October meeting. So I think we'll be okay with the timeline.
Okay. This may be for you, Ms. Lace Castillo. Have you seen the RFP?
No. I believe in the Superintendent's Council meeting, the adjustment was made in terms of timeline, and you were working on the actual RFP. Are we there yet?
No. We're almost there, and it will be sent out before it goes out to, for final approval, before it goes out to all the
It's July 14th. What if the superintendents say, we don't like this, this doesn't address this area, this area, this area? What is that going to do to your timeline?
Well, I think what I was looking at in terms of the timeline was just how long it's going to take districts to be able to put something together and respond. So it gives them at least 6 weeks, if not more, to be able to respond. If we needed to do it, then they have a month to respond and adjust it from there.
But the RFP goes out July 31st. So the six-week time frame is districts who are interested in bidding, preparing their paperwork. It's not for the time where districts are going to be looking at an RFP and saying, you know, this isn't going to address the concerns about an administrative unit. That, I would believe, would happen before you send an RFP out.
Right, but if I don't have my calendar in front of me, but by the 23rd, let's say, July 23rd, it goes out to the district superintendent to say you need to have feedback back to the Selma office within a week to be able to meet that timeline.
So you plan on having the RFP to
excuse
all of
me
the
one
districts.
Minute. We're recording this, so can you talk into the microphone?
Thank you, Mike.
So the RFPs will be to the districts by the 23rd?
Yes.
And will you have a meeting between the 23rd and the 31st once you start getting concerns from districts?
No.
How are you going to, if one district says, what about this area, how are you going to get it into the RFP in time for the July 31st deadline to then, you know, before the July 31st deadline, get it out to the rest of the districts for their approval?
It's to take the feedback and make the changes and send it back out.
Well, what if one district says, I don't want this changed? I mean, you're back into a situation where one district says, I don't like this. Another district says, well, I want this changed. You don't have a meeting of the minds on an RFP that 11 districts have to agree to.
I'll have to go back and look at the timeline then.
Okay. This is not that complicated. What people need to do for the AU function is not that complicated. I would not anticipate it taking that much, that we would have a difficult time getting people to agree that we've covered everything, to be honest.
Can you outline the duties of the administrative unit, since that wasn't a question that could be answered at the last meeting?
Yeah. As I said earlier, what the administrative unit is responsible for primarily is receiving funds. Mm-hmm. All right. They need to be able to receive the funds. They need to be able to do the transfers, to transfer those funds out to all the SELPA members in a timely manner. They need to do the financial reporting back that's required for that. They would hire the SELPA staff and do the payroll and everything associated with that. They would need to do all of the purchasing as well for the SELPA office. Okay, it's relatively simple in terms of the functions. It's how many people do you need to do the accounting and to do the setup, the transfer, so money goes out. We're receiving, usually on a monthly basis, anywhere from about $4.5 million to a little over $5 million a month. That needs to, as soon as it comes in, it needs to be transferred out proportionally to everybody. You know, we set up the schedule, and what happens is each month they simply do they set up the transfer to go. So it's not a case of you're having to do computations all throughout the year. Once you know what, once you have the amounts that you're setting your calculations up with, you set it up and then you just make it happen. It's a mechanical function to make sure that the funds go out, and then also that they get the information. You know, they get the required information back for the state reporting, and then also for the federal grant reporting. Okay, so they set up the grant letters, they send them out, they allocate, they disperse the funds. As soon as they come in, then what they need to do is get the information back from the districts in terms of the expenditure report so that they can aggregate them together and send them on.
So
it's not,
it will be up to the district turning in a bid to determine what they believe they need for staffing.
Yes, that's exactly right. I mean, that's the part that they would need to look at and say, how many people will it take in the business office in order to perform this function? I think that's
and
the biggest thing.
And so when the business officers meet in September, they will be able to say, looking through the bids, I agree that this is the number of people that could do the job.
Well,
that we don't have an instance with a district saying, okay, we need one person, when in reality you really should have three.
I would say yes. I mean, the functions that they will be doing are functions that would be going on. Obviously, dispersing the funds is somewhat different, but you're talking about working through the accounting process and all of that. And so I would expect, yes, that the business administrators would be able to look at these and size them up and say that makes sense or not.
And are there any parameters being set on who can bid?
Well, it needs to be one of the local education agencies in the SELPA. You know, it can't be somebody from outside the SELPA, obviously. But that's really the only qualifications. It has to be someone that is a member of this SELPA.
So if we have a district in financial trouble, we would be okay with allowing them to become the administrative unit if they come up with the best business plan to be the administrative unit for the SELPA?
I would say not necessarily, no. I would also be very surprised if they were in financial trouble if they would put in a bid. They probably wouldn't need the headache, to be honest with you, in terms of the amount of funding it's going to go. Remember, we're talking about $100 million passing through. And yes, it's you know, it's all set up, it's straight transfers through, but it still is $100 million coming through. And so I would think that someone that is having financial problems would not be real interested in this, in doing this. It would be one less thing that they would have to contend with in terms of being in a not a sound financial position.
Okay. According to the numbers, most of the money in the SELPA just passes through to the district.
Right.
Is the money that is staying within the SELPA basically to run it covering the costs?
Well, it was until the indirect rate kept going up. We've basically eaten through our reserve because of the fact that the indirect rate that the county has been charging because of the increased primarily because of the occupational therapy contract and the fact that it's increased so much and they've been charging an indirect rate on that. It's pretty much eaten through our reserves.
Has that been going on? How many years did it take to eat through the reserves?
Since 2003-04.
And if it's been happening since 2003-04, why was this issue not addressed about maybe retaining more funds to cover the cost of SELPA, reducing some of the cost of the of what you need to do? I'm confused as to why you reached a situation where the reserves are gone.
That primarily is my fault, okay, as the former SELPA director. We did increase over time. We increased the amount of money we were taking out of program. I had a hard time taking more money out of program in order to fund this, and I should have taken more, to be honest with you. That's what it's about. Just had a real hard time going in and grabbing program money in order to do it.
Well, could you have cut cost of running the program? Instead of coming from the district, maybe staffing under the administrative unit or the SELPA?
Right. The SELPA has a very lean staff as it is. It's basically the SELPA director, a secretary. What is Sharon's title? Coordinator for the autism program. And then they hire a couple part-time people to do some program specialist things for the SELPA. So it's already a very lean staff. There's not much, you know. Yeah, you could probably go through and ring out a little bit, but not very much. So not in terms of what this contract has been costing.
Okay. Let's see. And so the administrative unit and the services are completely separate.
There's
going to be no costs. You know, with us moving the administrative unit, it's not going to affect services at all.
It will not affect the cost of those services. In other words, they're two discrete functions, and so moving the administrative unit does not take money away for program.
With us moving the administrative unit away from LACO, will they possibly charge us extra or have additional costs for providing those services?
No, they should not. There is a question about whether the county wants to continue to be a service provider.
Which really would have service provider to our SELPA or
yes.
Service provider, period?
A service provider to our SELPA, if they're not the administrative unit.
Okay, so what happens if they say we don't want to be the service provider?
They will have to give us notice, and then we would look at how we would take over and operate those programs.
And when will we have a decision on that?
Well, the county has not given the SELP a notice. They have to give them a year and a day notice. Okay. Mm-hmm. For the county to have said they were going to give back programs in 2010-11, they would have had to have notified us in June, the SELP in June, which they did not do. So now we're talking about 2011-12. Would be the earliest that they could do that. So that should give the SELPA adequate time to look at making a change.
And
we did this. We went through this in 2004-05. There was a question about whether the county was continuing to be a service provider, and so we went through and we looked at how we would, you know, if they decided not to, what we were going to do, and we had come up with a plan. Fortunately, they decided to change their mind and stay with it. But, you know, we've looked at this once before. And if it comes, we should have adequate time to plan and do something about it.
What did the plan show in 2004-05? Was it going to be the cost for services going to be a lot higher than it would have been through LA, or would we have been able to do it?
You know, I think when you look at this statewide, I've been working with other SELPAs, and when you look at it, I think a lot of people feel that if you move... There are some people that are considering taking programs back from the county because they think they can be more cost-effective. I frankly think it would be hard to be more cost-effective. I think what we might be doing over time is decrease the rate of increase for the services over time. I think it could be a break-even in terms of we're talking about we have over $30 million that we're giving the county. The county got $31,223,4 and 7.8. That was the cost of the county program. If you disperse that, we have that money that we allocate out to run the programs. I think there's a feeling that districts could do it cheaper, somewhat cheaper. I frankly would not expect to see much in terms of a reduction in costs. I think the best we would do, like I say, is hold costs. And possibly have costs increase over time at a slower rate. That's when I've been looking with other and working with other SELPAs, that's kind of the pattern that I'm seeing. You won't know until you actually do it. What would happen is we really would not be reducing staff. I mean, we would be taking, we've got over 1,000 kids in the program. We would need to provide programs for all of those kids, you know, so we're not reducing anything in terms of the number of kids to be served. And so you'd be talking about making a change. And like I say, there are a lot of folks that feel that if you take a program and move it from the county back to the district, that you can be more cost effective. I'm not totally convinced of that, but I don't think it's the other way either. I don't think what we'd see is a major increase in cost as well.
That's it for now. Thanks.
Anyone else?
Just a closing remark, unless you have questions.
Well, I just, you know, I'm not going to belabor, you know, the 45 minutes that we spent on this, but I have the same concerns about CAVA, and and you know, I brought up the concern last time about the RFP and making sure we save money, and you know, I appreciate you taking responsibility for not looking at it earlier, because that really bothered me. That now that you're not there, we're looking at it, and it kind of.
Yes.
That bothered me as far as a way of using resources, and that bothered me. So just because I'm not asking the questions over and over again doesn't mean I'm not concerned about
that. No, I think we understand everyone's the district's concern about the money for CAVA.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Spencer, any comments?
No.
Do you have any way of knowing when we may get the money for CAVA? You understand there's a concern, but...
In a normal year, I would say yes. Right now, no. You know, we thought we would see money here early in July. We were told it's going to be to the end of the month. The P2 payment is not going to come till the end of the month. We're not sure. Although, you know, I'm working with people in Sacramento. They were asking for us to set up what the advance apportionment would be, which is kind of good when they're asking. That they think an advance apportionment is going to come, but we still don't know if we're going to get any money in July and August yet for the 09-10 advance apportionment. With the mess up there in Sacramento, we're waiting to see when we're going to get money. And obviously, this is going to have a first call on the state entitlement money that will be coming in.
You were talking about the administrative portion of what happens at the SELPA and then the services we receive for students, and that you feel that we can do an adequate job for approximately the same amount of money if the county decides not to service our children or work with our... And the first program that pops up into mind is Mount SAC, and they actually hold the agreement. The county holds the agreement with that, and I'm sure that there's other things similar to that. And then piggybacking on that, when Hacienda La Puente no longer used the county, they had a difficult time finding a place for their most severely health-impaired students that were multiply handicapped and ended up having to build their own building. That took a number of years so they could service that. I'm hearing you say that we could probably work through these things, but how long would it take us, knowing that I think it took at least 3 years for Hacienda La Puente to build their building and properly house their students?
Well, we're already housing most of them on district campuses as it is. Okay, there are two county-owned buildings right now. One is East San Gabriel Valley, which is behind Lark Ellen Elementary in Covina. The other one is El Camino, which is behind Palomares Intermediate in Pomona. I would anticipate that if we did this, that the county would turn those buildings over to us if we wanted them. There's a lot of good reason why we need to be reducing those populations in those buildings, and I think this would be a good push for us to really get after that. We were very close to really working toward reducing those populations, and what happened is that summer, that was the summer that Governor Wilson said we're going to have class size reduction, and we had some plans that we were just about ready to go with, and of course everything stopped because suddenly everybody was trying to find classroom space. We were lucky to hold on with what we had, and everything came to a halt in trying to do something. I think this would be a good reason for us to look and see if further we could move the rest of those classes, given the fact that we've got declining enrollment going on, that there's classroom space available. You know, it could be attractive for us to move more of those classes onto regular campuses and possibly keeping some campuses open that might close otherwise. And so I think there's some things that could be done there that would be beneficial to us. I don't think we would run into the problems that Hacienda had, to be honest with you.
How many contracts do we have, such as the one we have with Mount SAC?
There are only two, the Mount SAC contract, and we have the same thing. We have a storefront that we lease.
When you say we, the county leases?
The county holds the lease. And what we would do is we would transfer those leases to someone else, to one of the member districts. You know, it could be possibly Walnut because of Mount SAC being located. We would find a place to transfer the lease, maybe back to – the reason the county owns the lease – not well, I shouldn't say that. I think primarily because they're the AU and they're holding the lease. We could transfer it to the AU. I don't think we'd have problem with either of the leases being able to transfer those, to be honest with you.
And how long were the leases for?
You know, I'm not sure off the top of my head. It seems to me we renegotiated. I'm not sure where we are with Mount SAC, if we're on a year-to-year basis or whether it's a longer-term lease. I also can't remember with the Citrus site either. It's at the corner of Citrus and
I know
Route
where
66.
It is.
Down the street from Azusa Pacific and Citrus.
I'm just more concerned that those are the only transition programs, and if the county actually holds the lease, you can say, sure, it's easy to take those leases back, but if the county decides not to, and maybe they want to house other students there, I don't know, that could happen.
I think it's very unlikely that would happen, given the, I'm not sure who the county would, knowing who else the county has in terms of services, I don't think it's a fit for any of the other things that they have. Certainly it's not a fit for them to bring kids with disabilities from other locations there, because it's just too long a drive.
To where?
Mount SAC or Citrus. They sit right in the middle of the SELPA. And so, for example, if they wanted to bring kids from West San Gabriel Valley this way, it's a long drive, especially to Mount SAC. You're coming all the way across the valley. So I don't think that's a problem. I mean, I also don't see the county standing in the way of transferring the leases. We've had situations, well, Santa Clarita and Antelope Valley, they both decided to take programs back from the county. It wasn't the county telling them, they decided to take programs back. The county worked very well with them in terms of facilities and the buildings that the county owned, and it was, I think that was a smooth transition in that aspect, and I would expect the same thing in, you know, in terms of that, those issues.
The let me just look at my notes. A lot of the questions have been asked, so I want to make sure I don't re-ask any of the questions. It looks like everything has been covered except what type of balances does the SELPA carry? Any? Are you in a negative balance now?
I think we're going to end the year about $200,000 in the red. Yes.
And
they have not posted. The last figure that we saw was like $6,900 to the good, but they hadn't posted the indirects and some of the allocated support charges. So I think we're going to be about $200,000 under.
And it was said that you may want to increase your ending balances by $500,000, and where would that money come from?
It would have to come out of the existing allocation.
Out of the services for children that you didn't want to take away from when you were talking about
the only reason for making, and that was my suggestion. Okay, I don't want to blame Sarah for that one. The only reason for even considering this is because of the one-time ARRA funds. We're getting $20.6 million. They're one-time funds. I won't even start about, as a professional, how I feel about one-time funds coming into a grossly underfunded program. There's not enough time in the evening to do that. But because of the fact that we have these one-time funds, I felt that it was an opportunity to possibly put a reserve back in place without having to take money out of program. Okay. You know, in other words, they have to take existing money, our existing $101 million, to do it.
I know you already talked about the OT services, and I know I'm just wondering how those funds are allocated. Is it for the OT services? Is it by the IEP, and not each district gets a certain allocation of OTs? How does that work?
Well, obviously, what's driving the services is the IEP process. So every child that has an IEP that calls for OT services, the district would refer them to our provider. What we do then is take the money, in this case, $2.3 million, we're allocating it based on average daily attendance, current year average daily attendance. So you're not standing the three-year average penalty for that. And so West Covina gets its share of that money. Okay, and then what we do is we compare what everyone has allocated to what was actually expended for resident pupils. And if you were allocated more money than the services cost, that's revenue to you. And I know that's the case in West Covina right now. Looking at 8-9, you're actually in a positive position to where the amount of money that we allocate to you is greater than what the services are actually costing. Okay, for your students.
And would that be the same thing for the low incidence too? The money follows the students and it would be reallocated to us? Or is all of that low, and it's a small number, I was surprised at how little low incidence
The low incidence equipment money goes to the provider programs. They make the purchases of equipment. Okay, the equipment is technically belongs to the SELPA and to the state. And if you don't need the equipment anymore, we are supposed to offer it to other SELPAs. Every once in a while, we see someone coming across saying, I've got this piece of equipment that I don't need anymore. Does anybody want it? So it is very restricted. And the reason it goes to the provider, to the low-incidence providers, is because they're the ones that really have the expertise. They stay up on the technology. Most of this money is being spent on technology. When you look at the visually impaired program, when you look at what they're doing with brailing and large print and everything, it's amazing what's happening with technology. It's the same with deaf and hard of hearing. We're constantly trying to keep our audiology suite up to date because there's just constantly new things coming in. And even equipment for students with orthopedic impairments, the same thing. They're constantly coming up with better equipment. And very often what you're doing is you're replacing, you know, every 3 or 4 or 5 years you could be replacing equipment because the new equipment is so much better in terms of what it does for kids. And so it stays with those programs, and they make they're usually the people that are keeping up on the technology to be able to say, this is what you really, we think the child needs.
And that if they were, if we had a student in our district that wasn't in one of the provider programs, a deaf child that elected to stay in our district, they could still receive
those would
services,
go to the provider.
But it would belong to the low incidence.
Yeah, technically it stays within the low incidence. But, you know, if that child is in your district for 10 years, that equipment's staying with them. If it's on the IEP, it's staying with them. So, there are two. I know there's one other. There's been another child. I think it was one of the deaf-blind pupils that we bought low-incidence equipment for. There was a student from California Virtual Academy that we bought, a visually impaired student that we bought some equipment for. I think it was like $4,000 or $5,000 worth of equipment. It was a special device. So, yes, even if you have a low-incidence student that you're currently providing services to in your district, they still can get equipment through that fund. They just go to the provider. And again, it's because of the fact that those folks keep up with the equipment and usually know what the best match is, and you know, they take the time to go to the presentations to keep up on what's happening and what the changes are.
Are there any other questions?
Yes.
Mr. Fuller.
You said we're getting more money than what we're actually spending. Is that what you said?
In terms of occupational therapy services, we're allocating $2.3 million based on average daily attendance. West Covina's, the amount that West Covina gets allocated for occupational therapy services is greater than the services are actually costing at this time. You know, that could change next year, depending on the number of students that need it.
But we don't see the money unless
absolutely.
Use it.
No, it's whatever is the difference is becomes revenue to you. The other side of it is, you know, there are a number of districts that are in the negative. If that's the case, then revenue has to come back and backfill. In your case, you're on the other side of that. So you are gaining some money.
Which leads me into the next one. I am dismayed. That quote is just, I am dismayed. Our students are hurting. We had an increase of 135 students. Let me make it clear. There are two parents on this board that have children, have had children in exceptional services. I'll let another person around here speak if they want. We run a tight program. We accept standards. We bring things. We had an increase in our district of 135 students with needs, exceptional needs, of which we couldn't fund because of the SILPA, because of an allocation plan that makes no sense. They came out of somewhere, and nobody knows the history of. Somebody devised it, and it sounds good. I'll be perfectly honest. It sounds like you can wheel and deal with it because there is no real clean way.
No,
and it ends up we have more money than we should. Others are hurting. We aren't getting the money that we need, and others are doing okay. We're not getting there, and I'm dismayed. I see a need for an audit, an external audit, to corroborate what you said, that the state doesn't have any guidelines, that we can spend the money the way we want, and have an external audit come in and look at the way the money's been spent and corroborate what you said. That, yeah, there were no guidelines, that there were no state standards, that this money's been used efficiently, and we know where it's going. I'm dismayed that we're being presented that things like autism with one live birth out of every 145 is low incidence as an authority. And that the legislature and the state has said, no, it's not. And we're using our resources to go up there and fight it. To go up there and fight it. And say it is low incidence. I don't know why. I don't know why, but nobody's checking it. We need to go back in and look at this formula. Not only the 80-20, I don't know where that comes. The attendance bothers me. What if you have a child that has severe disabilities? We're fortunate maybe to get them to school 2 days a week. Well, maybe they haven't been at all, but we're penalized because we can't get them there the other three. For their role in our district. We don't know what we're going to do if we have reduction. We don't know what we're going to do. We're not spread equitably. We need to go back. It's broke. It's broke. It's just plain broke. We don't know. It kind of creeps up on us, and all of a sudden we're paying too much. We need to go back and find another AU, and oh, by the way, but we aren't quite sure which of that's going to work, and we don't know quite what it is. But by the way, yes, we owe money, but we didn't have enough money left over. We didn't set aside the money, so we can't pay our bills. So guess what? Another one that's we're carrying the charter is out of luck. It's out of luck. Their students are hurting, so we can't get the money to them. I'm sorry. It's just I'm dismayed. I'm just dismayed. It needs to be restructured. The superintendent's council needs to relook at it. What the allocation is, how we're doing it, who we're hiring to put it in, who we're running to run the store. Get some clear guidelines of where we're going, and then do it. And that's where I'm coming from.
No changes. I guess my only response would be no changes are made without being approved by the superintendent's council, since they're the primary governance council.
And they need to be the leaders in this case.
So this wasn't just something that was thought up in a day and thrown forward. We took 6 or 7 months of work with business and program people to come up with a recommendation to the superintendent's council. You know, in terms of wanting an audit, my feeling is you ought to bring that forward to the superintendent's council. From my perspective, this ought to be transparent. It's your money. I've always felt, as a SELPA director, this is the SELPA's money. The SELPA is a group, in our case, it's 11 school districts, the county office, and 4 LEA charter schools. And if you think that there's something that's going wrong, then we need to do something about that. We need to get the information for you to give you a level of confidence that it is going okay. And we ought to do it. Okay? I think there's nothing to hide here. I've told you what I thought I did wrong in terms of not protecting our reserve better. But anything else, let's do it. Because this needs to be, I think you folks need to feel you're getting the best for your money. We're talking about $101 million. It's not nearly enough. We ought to be getting a heck of a lot more from the federal government, and we're not. But it's what we have, and we need to do the best with what we have. And so if we need to do something, let's do it. And I think bring it forward and bring it to the superintendent's council, and let's get on with it. This ought to be transparent.
And that includes an audit of the programs, because last time the new director had only seen 60% of the business, 60% of the programs. So I don't even know who's watching those. So if we're doing that, that's what I'm thinking.
I don't believe there's any other questions. I appreciate you coming out and give us more information, and we look forward to seeing the RFP. Mr.
Parks. Can we move to item 10 for consideration?
I have no problem with that. We're going to, since it's getting late in the evening, we're going to move on to the appointment number 10, appointment of administrative position. Is there a motion to approve the superintendent's recommendation for the following position?
Who is?
Well, usually we say that after the vote.
No.
Rich Nambu. Rich Nambu. Well, I thought because one time somebody wasn't voted on.
Do we know him? Is he here?
We need an external audit of what? The superintendent's recommendation.
We did.
It's been moved. Is there a second?
Yes.
It's been moved by Jessica Shoemaker and seconded by Mike Spence to approve Rich Nambu for the following position, principal at Walnut Grove Elementary School. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
Now you should get out while you can.
We want to make sure you show up at Walnut Grove Intermediate School, though, okay? Don't look for another one. Okay, we're happy to have you. That's okay. You said elementary, but it's okay.
Oh.
Congratulations, and thank you both for being here.
He's going to do both.
Yes, we might have to do that. Yeah. She's broadening the experience.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Rich. Thank you. Okay. Thank you.
Number four, resolution of board members' absence and compensation. When this had first come up, it was because I believe Mr. Cox actually wanted to attend the meeting, which is admirable. And I have no problem with paying the stipend. I just want to make sure that it's something that's looked at each and every time. I know since I've been on the board, there was one of our fellow board members who was in an accident and was hospitalized and had to miss a number of meetings. And this didn't come up. So I just want to make sure that each time there's an excused absence, there's been several times that people have really had legitimate reasons for not being here, and this hasn't come up. So I just want to set the, if we're going to start this precedent that each person is looked at. And I will move this.
I'll second.
Well, I have a comment real quick.
Well, how about if we second, then you comment?
Yes.
Oh, whatever. Well, you know, when I was discussing this with staff, because they asked me a question about it, I believe it was 1993, we actually approved a board policy or took action as a board that allowed this in certain circumstances without necessarily having it to be reviewed all the time. Because I think we did that around the time of Mike Kerrigan's heart attack.
Oh, that's even before me.
I know I'm talking about people that many of you don't even know the names of, but, you know, we took action
easy
in 1993, and I believe it was 1993. And so that should have, you know, covered the situations that Mrs. Polis is talking about. That board vote should have covered the things, you know, I don't want to go retroactively or whatever and deal with that, but those should have covered board actions similar to the one that is agendized here tonight.
We did try to find something in our records and couldn't. You know, I don't know if even the meetings were taped at that time or not, but we've been trying.
They were taped, and in fact, okay. We never approved a policy to destroy the tapes, so those tapes should be somewhere.
Okay. So Monica has worked diligently, unsuccessfully to find it.
All the meetings of 1993.
We'll add it to her full plate already.
Hello, Baldwin Park.
But this item, you know, as Mr. Spence has said, is in accordance with Ed Code, and we will take, we'll see what we can find and then take Mrs. Polis's comment into consideration with the board.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? It passes unanimously. It moves us on to number five. To reconsider the district memberships for California School Boards Association and the Coalition for Adequate School Housing. Mrs. Shoemaker, you asked to have this re-agendized.
I asked for this to be agendized for reconsideration for basically one reason, and that is after the board meeting, several staff members expressed to me the impact not being a member of CSBA and CASH would have on sort of some of the day-to-day things that they do in terms of bidding and just, you know, board policy updates. And I felt that although I personally do not like some of the stances these organizations are taking, that at this time we should not be members of these organizations, that we need to have something in place to take over some of the functions that these organizations provide for us. And so that's why I asked for it to be reconsidered.
Any additional comments?
This is just a reconsideration, not for the
vote. Yeah, there's two different votes.
Okay, can Ms. Shoemaker was in the majority.
So she has to make the motion. Or one of the three that voted no have to make the motion.
Right. What, can somebody second it?
Yeah, someone can second it who did not make the motion.
Okay. So I will move.
I'll second.
It's been moved by Jessica Shoemaker and seconded by George Fuller to reconsider the motion of June 23, 2009, and approve district memberships for 2009 and 2010 for CSBA and CASH. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
The vote's 3-2 with Mike Spence and Steve Cox voting no.
You have to move on the action.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, and I'll move. I have a comment.
Yes.
Well,
should we second it first? Yeah.
George Fuller.
I'll second.
Okay, my comment is I'm moving it, and I'd like to see it's back in, but something needs to happen. Some of the services that are offered, like Legal Alliance, is maybe good, or we don't belong, but it's an extra amount of money. Masters in Government is an extra amount of money. It's becoming very expensive to be a member of CSBA, and I've mentioned before, and I've mentioned to Mrs. Polis, and I'll mention it to CSBA, but like, I really believe in alternative service delivery model. And I really believe in least restrictive environment. I was disappointed that three superintendents stood up at CSBA convention in San Diego, said this is the greatest thing because we can reduce the number of special ed teachers because of the way we can allocate resources. I'm sitting there, no, that isn't what we really wanted to see. And I'm sorry that CSBA is kind of promoting that idea, and then they came in with CTC and said, we got to answer the speech pathologist. We'll just take, because we won't pay them the amount, we can't attract them, we'll just go and make a certificate for special ed teachers, and they can teach it in the classroom. I said, that's not really where I wanted to go either. And some of the other things that came up, like, somebody from Westwood from UCLA talking about how he's seen people jump over the fence at Jefferson High and the teachers at Locke High didn't know how to teach, and I'm sitting there, when was the last time you were at 41st and Hoover? So hopefully the message gets back. It is getting very expensive, and some of the services I hope we get a little bit tighter on.
Any further comments? It was moved.
I do.
Oh, Mr. Spence?
Just that I don't think anything has changed from the last time we voted on this. I understand there's politics involved and things like that. And in fact, that night I told people I thought this would be re-agendized, and sure enough, it was within 24 hours. The bottom line is the services that CSBA provided to us all require an extra cost, whether it's the conferences, whether it's the Educational Alliance, whether it's all those search services, all those things require an extra cost, an extra money maker for CSBA. The reality is the $10,000 goes for what CSBA lobbies for among the public and among Sacramento. And the past several years, they've become more belligerent towards taxpayers, more belligerent towards parents. For the first time ever, even though they'd stayed neutral for 17 years on the issue, they got involved and opposed SB 680 that both Gloria Romero and Bob Huff were sponsoring, and they were able to help stop it in the Assembly Appropriations Committee. And as a result, 5,000 kids are going to be forced to go to schools they didn't want to go to for the first time in 17 years because CSBA spent our $10,000 lobbying on that. I understand, this board has approved motions asking for additional revenue and additional taxes, so I understand why they would be supportive of this, but the belligerency of CSBA has taken a further turn over the last couple of years. And the original vote on the motion is what should stand. That's what's appropriate. That's what's consistent. But, I understand what's going on here. So that's fine.
In your opinion? Oh.
Once Jessica again, I'd like to reiterate what I said about the reason I brought this motion back, and that is because district staff has stated to us that there are services both of these organizations provide that are imperative to some of the job functions they have. They would like these organizations to stay in place. Political strategy and games are things that other board members bring to this table. So once again, staff has requested that these organizations stay in place. I fully intend over the next year to find another organization besides CSBA, unless for some reason they decide to do a 180 in positions they're taking, that can provide some of the services that CSBA now provides to us, so it isn't necessary to keep them in place. But to just vote them out because of those positions and not take into account the services they do provide that we do use and that we do need is ridiculous. And that is why I brought this motion back.
It was moved
I'm
by...
I'm sorry, I have a point of personal privilege then, Madam President. And that is, after I got done giving the reasons why I think we should oppose this, you made the comment of, in your opinion. And yet when the next speaker, who was on your side, made a statement about her point of view, you did not add the commentary, in your opinion.
In your opinion, it was all political. Ms. Shoemaker stated her reasons, and none of them were political. She did not bring that up. You brought it up that it was political.
My point of personal privilege, Madam President, is you add a commentary to my reasons. That is the problem.
I was going to go on and make additional comments to that. I didn't realize Ms. Shoemaker had her finger up.
After I made a comment.
I was going to say, in your opinion, it was game playing. And that you point your finger at people on a regular basis and say, this is what you do. Everyone has a right to their opinion.
Exactly.
Without you
saying
that they're playing games.
I can say they're playing games. Why can't I have the opinion they're playing games?
Okay. And I believe that you are a bully.
Well, you can say that all you want. I mean, you're the one that keeps shutting down
the
debate.
There's a motion on the floor by George Fuller, and it's seconded by Jessica Fuller.
I mean, you're the one that
has lied. Oh, sorry. Excuse me. Jessica Shoemaker, all in favor?
You need to be clear about that.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Nay.
It's 3-2. We're moving on.
Are we ever going to have a discussion about Mr. Fuller's name-calling stuff?
You know what?
Yeah.
You, please... I have the floor. If you need to say something, you can raise your hand. And you've pointed that out to me on several occasions. Please be as courteous.
I'm just saying.
As we are.
I was making a point of personal privilege and
you
interrupted
us, as we are to you.
You were not courteous to me. You interrupted
me
when I was making
the
a point
floor.
Of personal privilege. You interrupted me when I had made a
floor.
Point of personal privilege.
Excuse me.
You need to go back and read it. You need to go back and read point of personal privilege.
Are you through?
Hmm?
Are you through?
Same. You need to go back and read.
Are you through? Thank you. We can move on now. Item number 12, the information report.
What about 11?
Well, we're going to do 11.
Oh, sorry. Excuse me. Number 11, was remaining off, reduction of the resolution of reduction in force.
Okay. If I may address this with Mr. Seaman, in terms of adjustment of hours, Mr. Seaman, would you like to address this issue?
Sure. The resolution is for adjustment of hours of two positions at clerical assistant elementary, which is a clerical staff position at our elementary schools. To reduce one position from 8 hours to 6 hours and another position from 7 hours to 6 hours.
Any questions?
I have a comment.
Mr. Spence.
Yeah, I'm concerned about how we present things in public. And, my concern dates back to the resolution layoffs approved by the board concerning the media center. People, because that was presented as a budgetary constraint. And then our last board meeting, I brought up the issue of board travel, and it was suggested I was overreacting to our budgetary situation. And then now we have another issue in front of us where we're going to be cutting people's hours, and it's a budgetary constraint. And, I think, I'm concerned about adopting budget cuts piece by piece. There's a need for them, and I've voted for budget cuts in the past when we've had fiscal situations that are not as serious as what we may be facing, theoretically, as Dr. Lucas talked about, we're really not sure what's going on. So I'm concerned about that we need to be consistent in how we present budgetary constraints and how we talk about that. That's my comment.
I
had a question.
Mr. Fuller.
Just a point of clarity. This is to realign a situation where we could have been had stronger administrative direction and not so much as budget.
Mr. Seaman.
That's correct.
So budget is not a concern in this, but more to make sure that
it is. Read the first sentence in the background material.
Budget as well as the amount of work
to
be done
at
the school
sites. Back within the guidelines that we originally adopted.
Correct.
Right. So, I'm satisfied. I'll move it.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
It was moved by George Fuller and seconded by Jessica Shoemaker. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Nay.
The vote is 4-1, with Mike Spence being the no vote. That moves us to item number 12, the information report on the Casey.
Okay. This is on our Williams lawsuit settlement, fourth quarter reports. And Mr. Seaman, could you please report?
Yes, I'm happy to report that we have no complaints filed for the fourth quarter. And that is what we reported to the county.
Can I ask a question?
Mr. Spence.
Parents are notified how to make the complaint when they get their packet at the beginning of the school year?
Correct.
Right? Is that the only time that they're given that information? It's in the student handbook?
It's in the student
handbook. Believe me, I'm not encouraging complaints because the state should never settle this lawsuit. But is that how people find out about it?
That's the notification that goes home, but there's also notification that's posted at all school sites, in all classrooms, and common areas, buildings.
Part of the settlement agreement?
Yes. Has to be posted.
How do we compare with districts around us? I mean, I don't think we've ever had a complaint. Is that correct, or have we had one?
We've never had a complaint for Williams or Valenzuela or Casey. I don't know how we compare to other districts around us because they don't publish a report.
So there's no centralized data?
Yeah, everything goes to the county, but I've never seen a report published by the county as to complaints and how many there were and the nature of the complaints. I've never seen that. Okay. I'm sure they keep records, but they've never published anything.
Well, I mean, I'd like to, I'm curious, you know, if this is pretty standard that people don't complain. I assume there may be some districts where there are, you know, a series of complaints because you can complain about almost anything in general and make it a Williams complaint.
We can contact the county and see if they have any kind
next time you talk to
information
them,
they can share. Okay.
Great. Thank you.
Mr. Spence, you took item number 13 off purchase orders.
Yes, I did. I would like to separate out PO number 0904181. So would you like me to move all of them with the exception of that?
Yes. It was it George?
Well,
it Mike and George?
So
okay.
I prefer. So.
It was moved by Mike Spence and seconded by George Fuller to approve the purchase orders except for
0904181.
Yes.
On page 8.
Mm-hmm. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
And I'll move purchase order 0904181.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
I will be voting no.
The vote is 4-1 with Mike Spence being the no vote. That brings us to the conclusion of our board meeting. Our next board meeting will be on August 11th. And we will be adjourned at 8:30.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.